future. There are no people. There are no people in the future. No people at all. There are no people in the future. Where did all my people go? There are no people in the future. Let me try my people call.
Everybody, welcome, welcome. It is Friday, November 19th, 2021. Welcome to Raging Chicken's Out the Coop podcast. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Each week, I talk to that guy who is back to brunch. Yes, it is. It's Sean Kitchen. We talk about the good, the bad, and the ugly in state and national politics. And you can help support this show today, right, by heading on over to our Patreon page. It has over to Patreon for as little as $5 a month. You can help support the show by going to patreon.com/rcpress. You can also help out the show right now by heading over to our YouTube channel, if you're not there already, that is, and hit that, smash that subscribe button, like the stream for the show, and hit that notification bell that you'll know every time that we go live. Sorry for the little fumbly start here. I had a little tech glitch that I had to get sorted out as I was kind of ready to launch, so I'm a little off. Anyways, on today's show, new research shows that at least 50% of people who survive COVID-19, quote, experience a variety of physical and psychological health issues for at least 6 months following their recovery, unquote. And that is according to the Washington Post. And the Congressional Budget Office says that Biden's Build Back Better bill, will not be entirely paid for, as the White House claimed. It's close, but the CBO didn't think that the IRS would be able to raise the $67 billion over 10 years. $670 billion over 10 years. They put it more at about $207 billion. And that just might be enough for Manchin and Sinema to take a hatchet to key provisions of the Build Back Better bill. We shall see. UAW workers at John Deere approved a new contract after a month on strike, and a third go-round, right, on contracts shows you a little bit of worker power here, right? Yes, the agreement will see a 20% increase in wages over the course of the contract and a significant improvement in working conditions. Let's remember, this is in a context in which John Deere had set records for profit-making during the pandemic, right? So not a problem here for them to kind of hand out a little bit to the people who made it possible. Rank and file working power, baby, that's where it's at. The Ohio House passed a bill that will let residents 21 years or older carry concealed weapons without any kind of license or permit. Yes, if the Ohio Senate passes the bill now, there will no longer be a requirement for a background check or training. There you go. I can't imagine what could possibly go wrong. A school district in Goddard, Kansas orders 29 books be banned from its libraries. You can already guess what kind of books are going to be banned. Yes, the Pulitzer Prize-winning play Fences by August Wilson, Margaret Atwood's Handmaid's Tale, The Hate U Give by Angie Thomas, and Toni Morrison's The Bluest Eye are among the books on the list. Women and people of color. Yes, imagine that. God forbid. God forbid. And Ithaca, New York votes to decarbonize all of its buildings by 2025. It becomes the first such city in the nation to do so. The unanimous vote for the Efficiency Retrofit and Thermal Load Electrification Program. That's the ERTLEP. will include everything from swapping out natural gas and propane cooking with electric induction to installing solar panels. That city of 30,000 people is working with a Brooklyn-based company called Block Power to manage the program, and the move will eliminate 40% of the city's carbon emissions by 2025. And right-wing parent groups at the forefront of the critical race theory protests are now shifting their target to school-based mental health programs. According to reporting by NBC News, yep, you heard that right. No more talk of suicide prevention, depression, or any kind of, quote, social-emotional learning. Want to wipe that out? That's their goal. Right-wing groups apparently believe that social-emotional learning has become a Trojan horse for critical race theory and would encourage children to celebrate diversity and sometimes introduce students to conversations about race, gender, and sexuality. Clutch your pearls, NRA dudes. And a QAnon shaman sentenced to 41 months in prison. It's going to be a nice little prison dance he's going to be doing in there. I wonder if they're going to let him take his horns in. And today, a little PA focus. Earlier this month, the Fulton County Commissioners denied the Fulton County Library a $3,000 budget increase because they host hate groups. Yep, that are sympathetic to the LGBTQ communities and or the Black Lives Matter movements. Right? So, you know, I guess hate's in the eye of the beholder, I guess, here, right? Insane. In response to this bigotry, Emily Best from the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast launched a GoFundMe page to help the library close its budget gap and ended up raising over $26,000. Emily Best for the win this week, everybody. And Pennsylvania House Republicans used their fall session to highlight their extremist agenda. House Republicans passed a constitutional open carry gun rights bill, a bill making bail funds illegal, and advanced more voter suppression measures. And there you go. It's a litany. It's like a cookie jar. It's great. And the House Labor and Industry Committee held a hearing on the state, on a slate of radical anti-union bills. Public sector labor leaders refused to participate in the committee's farce, and Democratic Chair Jerry Mullery walked out of the committee meeting and hosted a press conference outside the meeting with members of labor leaders. That's what you gotta do. Walk away, deny them any kind of sense that this is legitimate. And a landmark PA school funding trial just got underway. The case involves a cash-strapped Panther Valley School District and five other Pennsylvania school districts. In opening remarks, of course, GOP House Speaker Brian Cutler argued that there's nothing to see here. Everything's fine. Yeah, tell that to the 75 kindergartners in the Panther Valley School District who are forced to share one toilet and two urinals. Insane. And this past week, Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman joined Kutztown University Diners Workers United for a rally on Tuesday. Man, it was a freaking amazing event. They were demanding that Aramark and Kutztown University recognize their union. Remember, they are the only dining workers in the entire state system of higher education without a union. So, and kudos to John Fetterman for showing up. And Dina Lagerman, former Central Bucks School Board candidate, wrote an excellent piece in Medium this week, critically responding to the recent two-part podcast on The Daily from the New York Times on the school board wars in Central Bucks. Dina Lagerman lays out a much more toxic history and lays bare the role that Paul Martino played in fomenting the conflicts. I'm going to have a kind of a something on it that'll be for on our Patreon page that'll break down that podcast a little bit more. But check her article out. It's fantastic, right? And devastating at the same time. And today's last call, we'll see what's happening. We'll check in with Sean. We know we got a new camera bag. That's a big deal, right? So we got to talk about that. Absolutely. And I'm looking forward to some little sci-fi releases here. The highly anticipated series, The Wheel of Time, will launch on Amazon's Prime Video. You can be prepared right now for the social media haters and lovers once this thing gets launched for a whole bunch of reasons. I personally have never read The Wheel of Time. As a sci-fi head that I am, I'm a little bit disappointed with myself on that score. But nonetheless, I'm definitely going to watch this. Looks really, really good. The new season of Star Trek Discovery also launched this week. That's on Paramount Plus. Haven't watched the first episode yet, but man, my friend Amy, she was on Twitter like, hey, look, Discovery's out. Did you know? I'm like, I didn't know. I gotta go. I'm very, very excited about that. So we'll check in and see what else is going on this weekend. Got some cool stuff happening here in Percy this weekend. I know that we're going to do a bunch of family stuff. And if you're looking for more PA-based progressive talk, tune into the Rick Smith Show's live stream at 9 p.m. Eastern and on his YouTube channel, Twitter, Facebook, wherever you get your streaming content. And again, look, you got to subscribe to his podcast and go to just head on over to thericksmithshow.com for all the latest across all his platforms. I mean, the Rick Smith Show has exploded over the past couple years. Now he's got a show on KPFK in Los Angeles, WBAI in New York. Right, absolutely fantastic stuff. He's got the TV show on Free Speech TV. Phenomenal. And if you haven't already, you got to check out the Sisters of the Night Caucus podcast. And you can find it on Anchor, Spotify, iTunes, wherever you get your podcast. The amazing PA women stirring the political cauldron behind this podcast rock the house. And they know where the bodies are buried. Make sure to follow them on Twitter at the Night Caucus. And make sure you're subscribing to that because it's good for your soul. Attention gamers out there, The Game Inn, that's with two N's. The Game Inn is a Quakertown-based black family-owned gaming store. You know, you got the holidays coming up. this is the time to be heading on over there and supporting local, local business, local black family-owned business. They're friends of the show, and they got everything from retro N64s, the latest consoles, video games, loads of collectibles, action figures, Funko Pops, you got it. And look, it's, back to school. Kids get A's in the report cards. Report cards just came in. Get A's on the report card. They get a discount for every A in the report card. Check them out on Twitter at TheGameIn with two N's. Check them out on their Facebook page. If you're looking for something particular or something that's hard to get, shoot them an email at TheGameInPA@gmail.com and tell them Raging Chicken sent you. Special shout out, of course, goes to Jonathan Mann, who wrote our intro song, There Are No People in the Future. Check out all his great stuff on his YouTube page and follow him on Twitter at SongADayMan with two N's, at SongADayMan on Twitter. This coming Monday on Out to Coop Live, we're changing things up a bit. I welcome Gwen Marshall, Associate Professor of Philosophy at Florida International University. We'll be talking about her book, Ancestry and Culture, an Alternative to Race in 5e. What is 5e, you ask? Well, that's the fifth edition of Dungeons & Dragons. Yes, indeed. This book looks to bring to the world of tabletop role-playing games a more critical and dynamic understanding of race and culture. It's really fascinating, really interesting. I'm really looking forward to this discussion this coming Monday. And look, if you want a progressive future, we need progressive media. Support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken for as little as $5 a month. Just go to patreon.com/rcpress. Look, we got rid of Trump. Now the hard work of building a progressive future begins. We're here for the fight, and we need you. Become a patron for the price of a good beer once a month. Help keep the media in the movement, and the movement in the media. Become a patron for as little as $5 a month by going to patreon.com/rcpress today. Man, Sean, how you doing?
Oh, I am doing pretty good. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good, pretty good. Sean, just so you know, there's some building inspectors, which might be kind of raiding. Inspecting Sean's.
They're lining up out. Lining outside my apartment now. Literally just looked out, but no, I got building inspections going on just for building smoke detectors and leaks and things like that. So new building owners here with my apartment, and they're just taking a look over things, which is good.
which is good. Excellent stuff.
We actually have good landlords, so which is hard to get in Harrisburg.
Yeah. Well, so are you enjoying the return to the cool down weather this week?
I am. I'm liking it. We had that weird 7-degree day yesterday, but I've been liking wearing my hoodies and like sweaters and stuff like that. So
yeah, me too. This is like I'm getting into my sweet spot stuff.
This is my prime time of the year.
Yeah, I think the way you put it was like finally the weather matches my fashion sense.
My mood, just gray black hoodies or black jeans and like gray sweaters.
Yeah, these are the insights you get, by the way, on Sean Kitchen's lifestyle channel. So do check that out. Oh man, well look, it's been it's been a week, once again. There's, news coming out about COVID. There's, looks like later today the FDA is going to approve boosters for everybody. You see spiking cases that is happening on. They're finding that long COVID is happening more than anything else. I just want to make sure that we're not kind of losing track of that and make sure everybody,
There's still a pandemic going on.
There's still a pandemic going on.
And the supply chain shortages are just like... No, we're gonna deal with this echo effect of COVID for years. There's a disruption in the major everything, and now we have to deal with it. Yeah. And it's amazing that the Senate Democrats don't see that happening, which is great.
Yeah, whatever. And we've got a national media that's too stuck in kind of whatever, both siderisms and things like this are looking for a scandal that they have very few have a really, especially when you get the cable news, but even some, the national press, you're talking about like the inflation that we're starting to see right here. And not putting it in any context whatsoever, just it must be because of Build Back Better, right? Thing hasn't even freaking passed, right? So it's
things are going up, prices are going up because of the supply chain shortage.
Exactly.
I don't know if anyone has said this or if Rick has said this, but this is what you get when you get 40, 50 years of outsourcing.
Yes.
Your whole entire, economy to the lowest bidder possible.
I don't know why that's hard for people to kind of like, you know, make that connection. It's like, well, what are the, why are all those ships kind of like, you know, off like the Los Angeles port and all this kind of stuff? Why are they backed up? Well, number one, because all the shit that we consume is coming from China overseas, right? I mean, we wouldn't have been, you think about this. Number one, we would have been more resilient, right, as a nation during the pandemic if we actually made stuff, right, and had some control over our supply lines kind of within the nation, right? But because we're forced to kind of be in this international context, that everything is then delayed. And then, of course, when you have, you know, a pandemic breakout in China, that also means that, you know, production shuts down over there. Right. And then when we shut down things over here, it means we stop making orders for things over there. Right. And so now you've got like a double backup, right, before things could get up to speed again. I mean, it's just like, you know, it's this is a classic, like, you reap what you sow. I mean, I don't know how else to put it. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. And the fact that like there are things going on, I mean, like the I guess this like great resignation is still going on, this job like shortage or this yep. like. People just quitting their jobs, yep. You know, in record numbers is still happening. And they thought it was going to stop over the summer. And here it looks like it's just like it's still gaining speed.
Yep.
No, I mean, like, that's another thing. Like, this literally, like, this Build Back Better plan would take crucial steps to address a lot of this stuff. Like, you know, childcare, universal childcare, which is needed. Yep. You know, because parents need to send their kids to like childcare to go back to work.
I know what you're talking about. What do you mean? You mean can't get these like little brats just kind of watch themselves, Sean? I mean, come on. I mean, yeah. I mean, this is like anybody like, who like lives a life like, knows this yeah. stuff. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, it's actually amazing. Like I grew up going to daycare like at 3 or 4 years old, like, and then like we're doing pre-K. Like, and you know, going through kindergarten, it's just amazing. Like, you're like right now, this stuff is just like, just not being taken care of.
No, it's like everything, you know, it's like, look, I mean, the supply chain, what we're seeing with the supply chain backup, right, is essentially what we're seeing in every aspect of our society right now. Right. And the Build Back Better bill is actually like an attempt to start to like address some of that backup, right? And so, you know, everything from childcare for, I mean, yes, obviously roads and bridges, that's easy to see, but also childcare, elder care, medical care, right? Education. I mean, like you just go right down the line. And like, and not to mention, of course, the gigantic dystopian future we got kind of sitting on our doorstep with climate change. I mean, it's
and
like, come on.
The long-term healthcare effects of COVID.
Yeah. I mean, so it's like, you know, everything like this is like, everything in that bill, right, is like makes total sense. And, you know, the supply chain backup is just kind of like, if we could just like see that as a metaphor for everything that we've done for the past 40 years because of this freaking neoliberal turn, and saw it as like, no, look, we're actually trying to kind of clean up the mess that we're doing. We reaped what we sowed, right? The whole trickle down neoliberal nonsense, right, is coming crashing down. And here you have an opportunity to actually start to address it. Does it completely address everything? Absolutely not, right? But it makes a huge step forward to saying like, actually, we can actually do stuff as a nation together again, right? But no, we're going to see that. So I don't know. We're going to see what happens. We're going to see what happens with this bill. You know, Biden, you know, I made the huge political mistake in my mind is like, you know, talking about the CBO as the gold standard for assessing all this stuff, right? Just kind of, why don't you
bunk on the mountain?
Yeah. It's like, why don't you freaking stab yourself in the back before you even get started down the street, right? Without recognizing, well, what is the CBO? The CBO is guidance, right? It's not freaking church. It's not the Pope, Joe, right? And Nancy, right? I mean, it's not what it is. It's a guidance for this stuff, and there's a disagreement over kind of some things. And what I didn't say in the show notes today, leading up, is like all this CBO stuff is happening just as they just like had no problem at passing through the kind of like what was it, the National Defense Act, right, which gave the Pentagon something like $26 billion more than they asked for. Right? And nobody did a CBO score on it. Right? I mean, so you got this massive spending and kind of the military infrastructure
that keeps those wheels greased.
Right. And I'm just like, yeah, but then it comes to like actually helping out people. No, forget about it. So it's like, you know, this is kind of where we are as a nation right now. And it's like, I'm really hoping that we get this forward. And then my concern here is that because you've got this CBO score that, you know, the House, you know, looks like it's going to go ahead and pass it after you got freaking like McCarthy's like one person nonsense show for like 8.5 hours or whatever last night. So it looks like they're probably going to pass it and then it'll go to the Senate. And now the CBO score is kind of trickling out. And then you're going to have freaking Joe Manchin and Kyrsten Sinema kind of have the opportunity now to kind of basically sink this thing. Or at least gut major provisions that they don't like. Like universal child care. Like, right, the prescription drug negotiation. You know, things like this. So we shall see. I mean, at this point, something's got to freaking get through. Because it's something's got to get through. I know what to say. But, you know, we'll see. We'll see. But there was other news other than the CBO and National this week. Freaking the John Deere workers, man. The UAW workers for there kind of got their contract, and they freaking won this thing hands down.
Which is amazing. It shows you what worker power does, especially like turning down two previous contract offers.
Yeah, absolutely. Nope. No, look, I mean,
I wonder what that's like. Being like in that part, you're on strike and you just turn down like your second contract offer. You're just like, everyone's just like, nope, go back.
No, I remember, look, I had these like, you know, these flashbacks, of course, like, through our contract negotiations through ABSCUF over the years, right? And this is not specific to ABSCUF. I should be really, really clear about this. But, you know, kind of the legacy of kind of business unionism, right, has been, you know, we go into contract negotiation and the communication between the negotiations team and the kind of workers, right, and whatever industry you're in, is usually some version of like, trust the team, right? So trust the team, they've got your best interests at heart, and they're going to get the best contract possible, right? And so then once they come up with a tentative agreement with that team, right, and then you go to workers, your job is supposed to rubber stamp it, right? Well, I hope what we're seeing right now, what we just saw with the John Deere workers right now, is basically say, no, we got a different model, right? That you're going to send, you got your tentative agreement, and the workers are going to get at it, and they're going to say to themselves, like, is this what we are on strike for? Like, no, we could do better. Like, we could do better with a corporation that is basically has, like, you know, record-breaking profits. As you know, there's no.
We're also seeing more strikes happening still.
excuse me.
You know, UPMC workers are on strike out in Pittsburgh now.
Yep.
You know, like there's, yeah.
Oh, we got Scranton teachers strike. We got the kind of the UPMC strike. You've got
Kellogg's
like,
strike is still going on.
Kellogg's strike. I mean, like yeah, Striketober didn't end.
As Rick Bloomingdale called it, it's Strikesgiving.
Strikesgiving. There you go.
That was like a joke that really fell flat on the Capitol steps, but it was good. It was a good try.
Yeah, I get it. I get what you're trying to do there, but you know, yeah.
The enthusiasm was there.
Enthusiasm, yep. It's only enthusiasm only goes so far. You know,
but no, I mean, like, it was, yeah, I mean, like, it just shows you what, you know, across the country, you had what IATSE almost went on strike with 60,000 yep. workers. No, I mean, like, the amount of labor actions that are happening right now are increasing. You know, I think it's like earth shattering? No, I think Connor Lewis on Twitter from Strikewave, he puts a really good, like, you know, he tampers down expectations on this stuff. But like what's going on is not like, you know, is unprecedented, but it's not like that big in the grand scheme of things, but it's still like good to see. Like, you know what I mean? Let's not make it out more than it is.
Well, I'm really encouraged.
It's like the stuff is very encouraging.
Yes, and what I'm especially encouraged about is not say like just the number of strikes, right? It's like, but you seeing this kind of pushback from rank and file workers, right?
Yeah, and it's also, I mean, we're still at a time where I don't think people really realize this, that like labor unions are still some of the most trusted institutions in the country.
Right.
Like, I mean, like the trust in labor is at literally at all time highs right now. And that's why it's important for, you know, like labor to have to be supported by labor when you're running for office and stuff like that. And it's also important that, like, you know, you have the Democratic Party starting to become more open with labor that I don't think that they were years ago.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm from Philly, so Philly's a labor town. So, like, that's just, like, you know, like, those that the support for labor from elected officials and showing up to events and strikes is ingrained in the politics, but, you know, that's not the national politics of the
right,
party.
Right, right, exactly. Exactly. But it's like, you know, this is where, I mean, this is about building power, right? And if we think this is like, you know, I had this, you know, excuse me, got a little dump in my throat. Hold on. Anyways, I was going
to
say,
I got like, something to fix that for you.
I bet you do. I bet you do. I bet you do. But, you know, a part of that was one of the interesting things about, you know, we had Laura Putnam on the show. And one of the interesting things about that discussion was, you know, really putting things in kind of power building context, right? This stuff takes time, right, to really build up power. And I think that what we're seeing right now is actually a trajectory in a very, very positive direction. That needs to be built on it. But let's be clear. We don't have a 40% labor density kind of in this country like we used to, right? So, I mean, we got a long way to go, a lot of organizing ahead of us, but there's definitely good things happening. On the flip side of that, on the bad stuff happening, we see that, you know, I mean, Sean and I talked about this last week too as well. Is what we saw around these school boards kind of around the country, you know, with this, you know, critical race theory and all this stuff was, yes, it was about that specific, you know, those municipal elections and the school boards this year, but it was really about kind of like testing out plans moving forward.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, we were talking about this in a group chat and I think like we can really talk about this. This lines up with the second half really well, because I mean, like, you look at Bucks and Montgomery counties with the school board races and where all this stuff was happening, ground zero. I mean, like, this is the same area that sent hundreds of people, like hundreds, maybe thousand, a couple thousand people, like, to the insurrection on January 6th.
Yep.
Like, this is one of the main, like, I would, yeah. So, I mean, like, and it's not surprising that, like, you know, like, from the school boards, this is what they moved on from, the insurrection to local races and school boards. And now, like, where they want to upend, I guess, no, it's literally like Handmaid's Tale. Like that type of, like, politics. Like, you know what I mean?
Right.
Patriarchal, like, top-down, you know.
No, absolutely. Politics. Look, we will talk about this, like, when in the second half or the second part, whatever you want to call it, and PA focus, when we get into stuff like Buck specific, mm-hmm. and look at Paul Martino and the New York Times, the podcast this week. But what we can see happening, even kind of at the national level, too, is, which mirrors exactly what's happening here, is that you have these trials that went out, this organizing effort that goes out, and now they're, you know, you see the GOP and the right wing looking to kind of keep this going, and so now you've got, you know, the book banning is the latest follow-up, you know, kind of eliminating books. This is happening in the Pembridge School District, but this is happening, you know, like I said, in the Goddard, Kansas, we said in today, 29 books have been banned from the libraries. That's absolutely kind of critical. You also have this renewed effort now to go after kind of school-based mental health programs, right? Going off kind of, you know, basically education around kind of suicide prevention and kind of looking for signs for depression and that kind of stuff. That was one of the things that is super, super concerning. And, you know, they're just pivoting, like, this far right on this stuff is just like pivoting right into this and say that, look, you know, you're going to see a lot of this stuff going forward in the elections in 2022 and trying to use this kind of parental power, right, as the overarching rubric on right-wing politics as a way of kind of, you know, dealing with politics. I'm trying to just see what Sean's doing here. Okay, Sean had to kind of head out for a couple minutes. So that was, you know, that's kind of what happened there, that is going to continue to happen. But the parental power looks like it's going to be, you know, one of the organizing principles to watch out for. And then thinking proactively, you know, progressive in the left, is that how we kind of engage that, right? Because I think that part of what has to be challenged, right, is precisely, well, what parental power are we talking about, right? What community power are we talking about? Because there's as much of a claim going on, you know, that that has been made, it started to make the organizing from parents groups who are concerned about the kind of the rightward turn of what's happening in school districts. And I know there's already good stuff that's happening in kind of in Bucks County here, but to see, to recognize, you know, the focus that we've had about, you know, what's going on in our own backyard, say in Bucks County or in the Pittsburgh area, you know, when it regards to, you know, the critical race theory stuff and now what's going to happen to the mental health stuff, this, you can see this, you know, modeled nationwide, right? So you have that in Kansas with the book banning, that's going to be focus on it. And now you're going to see this attacks on mental health programs. So that's deeply concerning, if you ask me. On the other kind of concerning things, we also see this. This is, you know, we'll talk about this briefly in PA today too as well. But the Ohio House just passed this bill that will basically allow residents of 21 years or older, you know, to carry concealed weapons without any kind of license or permit, no background checks, right? No training required. They just can conceal carry, and that's everyone's going to be out there, right? It's this kind of increasing move toward the wild, wild west. So we see, you know, again, these are not new things. I totally recognize it. But we can see, like, this is the strategy, right? we talked about what's happening in Pennsylvania, the same thing that happened in the House. Even if the one in the House, in the Ohio House, does not end up getting signed into law, it looks like it's on its way to. But even if it didn't, right, what they've done is that they've put this in front of their voters. They've handed out this red meat, right? They've kind of built out their contact list. They built out their email list. They built out their organization, right? As they kind of go into 2022, they can put this back on the, you know, back on the agenda and back on the slate for what they're going to campaign on going into 2022, right? It's highly predictable what the GOP does and what the right wing does in this country. But so here we go. This is just increasing evidence this is happening again, right? And of course, as you know, see, this is what the Republicans do. The problem, of course, is that there's real consequences in the world for this, right? So when you basically say everyone has, you know, if that passes, everyone could get, you know, carry a concealed weapon, right? What we've been watching with these, you know, this Kyle Rittenhouse trial, right? That's just going to be, you know, okay, yeah, an AR-15 wasn't exactly a concealed weapon, but now you're going to have people carrying around handguns and concealed weapons, right, in Ohio around protests. Like, how does that end up, right? I mean, just kind of like little thought experiment, right, as the libertarians love to do. Where does that, where does that end up, right? Not in a good way. Lastly, this was a really cool story, and I wanted to have some, like, you know, positive focus, because we know that in the aftermath of COP26, there was increasing frustration by people that, you know, this just clearly didn't go far enough. And that is true. But people like Kate Aronoff and other kind of writers who've been, you know, who are right on climate stuff pretty consistently, they didn't go into COP26 with a whole lot of hope. Right. And what I thought was really interesting is that you saw increasingly these folks who've been writing about, journalists who've been writing about climate, really talk about it as kind of like a climate trade show, practically. If you looked at kind of like the booths that were there and the people that were registered for the climate, right, it was disproportionately people from the corporate sector and from the fossil fuel industries. Right. So that was kind of the outside, quote unquote, you know, interested parties. Right, it was a lot of that. So there was a cautionary tale going into there. It wasn't the high hope that we had around, say, the Paris Agreement and so on. No, it was a different one. And I think people came away from that with really a strong sense that that we were going to really do things locally. And if you listen to the Wednesday show, this past Wednesday was with Cyril, we focused in on this campaign for fossil fuel divestment with the Vanguard Group, right, in the Malvern, PA. And I think that's a really kind of way, interesting way forward. Another interesting way forward too, as well, is what they're doing in Ithaca, New York, right? By looking at this program to say, look, you know, unanimously, right, they voted, their city council voted to kind of move forward to a complete decarbonization of all Ithaca-based buildings by 2025. Right, that's before 2030, if you know, you're doing your math, and that's super, super ambitious. They were supposed to start this last year, but then COVID put a big stamp in it. But instead of kind of slowing down, they're kind of speeding up the process. All right, so that's going to be a really interesting case to watch. There's this Brooklyn-based company called Block Power that they brought in to help kind of manage this program. And from what I understand, I've been reading, trying to kind of understand more about what this Block Power company is and things like this. But apparently, they are the kind of company that is kind of trying to position itself to do exactly this stuff, right, to do all the retrofitting, to go in and kind of make sure that you're, these old buildings are brought up to the kind of the code that is ready for an alternative energy future, right? Or we say a non-carbon energy future, because it's no longer alternative, it's the necessity. So that's moving forward. That will eliminate about 40% of the city's carbon emissions, which is absolutely, that would be incredible. And what I really, really appreciated about this article was in, let me see if I could point to this. It was in the Washington Post, actually. The article in the Washington Post goes in, and when they're interviewing the mayor of the town and some of the city council people, they're basically clear about the fact that, look, this is only 40%. Right now we have to start thinking about our transportation infrastructure, right? How do we go more to a kind of a non-car kind of centered focus, right? And they're also, it looks like to me, is that they're also kind of building upon kind of this different approach to city planning, right? Which is going to, you know, have more dense town. I have a more dense town and having kind of less car friendly spaces downtown. Now, if you've ever been to Ithaca, New York, I mean, this is not far from where I grew up, about an hour, 20 minutes maybe from where I live. That's where Cornell University is, which is, you know, one of the primary drivers of the economy around there. But the downtown Ithaca area, right, you already have this kind of like open courtyard area, right? So you've got a big walking space that was already built into local stores. And Ithaca is known for its quirkiness, right? It's known for its small businesses. It's where like the Moosewood restaurant is. If you're kind of a vegan, you probably know about the Moosewood cookbook. Their restaurant is there. So it's been kind of a crunchy alternative town for a long time. Way back in the day, they were one of the towns that had a socialist mayor for a while, right? So there's a progressive tradition within Ithaca, and plus you've got the university right there, and the university, some folks from the university are doing some consulting with the town about what are some, say, best practice, how do you go about doing this? So it's going to be one to watch. So though all those conditions that I just mentioned, right, are not exactly like the identical thing in other kind of districts, obviously. But I think it's going to pave the way, seeing as a model about what can happen at the municipal level. So I'm reminded of what the Lehigh Valley DSA did around Medicare for All. Yes, Cyril, Ithaca is gorgeous indeed. but I'm imagining what... now I'm totally distracted, but what the Lehigh Valley DSA did in the Bethlehem City Council is they came forward with resolutions in support of Medicare for All. Right now, they weren't the only ones who did this kind of stuff, but I remember following this one pretty closely. And you know, they did the hard work of campaigning. They worked and talked to legislators. They had kind of like develop a resolution to kind of put forward. Right, they showed up at the meetings. They answered questions. Right, and they eventually got it to pass. Right. And though having that passed, right, again, let's think about building power here. Having that passed, does that mean everybody in Bethlehem right now has Medicare for All? Obviously not. Right. That has to be a federal thing. But right, that's a building an organizational infrastructure. Right. That is building power. Right. That is kind of working on. And as Laura Putnam said on the show on Monday, right, those are exercising those muscles. Right. Those, say, democratic, small d, democratic organizational muscles to prepare for those fights going forward. And I think what we're seeing in Ithaca and kind of building out and decarbonizing its buildings, right, we're seeing another example of this. Right. Something that is within the control of the local that could focus on. So on the one hand, like we touched on Wednesday. What Cyril's focus of looking at the divestment campaign by the Vanguard Group shows kind of one particular kind of campaign, this divestment kind of move. And then now we see what's happening up in Ithaca is seeing this a kind of opportunity to actually think about decarbonization on the municipal level. And then asking the question, well, where in our communities can we do this? And who has already started to build some of that organizational infrastructure that could start bringing some of these things to their townships, to their city councils, and so on. I'm really excited about that as a possibility and looking for those kind of models. Because while I was, you know, I mean, you heard me a few weeks back on when I did an open phones on Out to Coop Live, when I was pretty down when it came to some of stuff in the climate, because it's pretty bad. And since then, you know, I've just basically shifted my focus to looking at kind of some of the positive organizing stuff that's going on. So that's pretty cool. Welcome back, Sean.
Thank you. I am back.
Sean had to run to the store and get himself a hat.
Yeah, I did. I decided to put my Eagles hat on.
There you go. Welcome back.
Yeah. Go Birds.
There you go. And to close that out, we got to say that the one thing that we did see happen this week is that the QAnon shaman is getting sentenced to 41 months in prison. So
that's pretty hard time. That's a fucking 2.5 years.
It
ain't no easy sin.
No, and like the sentencing recommendations were 41 to 51 months. But judges don't have to abide by those things. They can just, you know, in the past, you see these kind of cases, they give them a slap on the wrist and maybe like a couple of weeks in prison. But, you know, this judge even said, like, you know, it looks like you really feel remorse about this. Looks like you really does. 41 months in prison.
I wonder if he's going to be able to get his vegan food in county prison.
Yeah, we're going to see. We're going to see about that. Not so sure.
you don't think the county lockup has vegan food? It's going to be like Shawshank Redemption. You get a maggot in there every once in a while.
Well, you know, it's a little protein, you know.
It's not get exactly. A little bird in your pocket.
Yeah, exactly. 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 Anyways, so anything else you got in the kind of national scope, Sean?
No, nothing really. Nope.
All right. So we're just going to add on to Sean's last break and we're going to go take another little quick break and we're going to come back right now with the PA focus. All right. This is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We will be right back after this quick break. Oh, wait, you know what? This is the one bad thing about my part of the reason that, you know, I talk about these technical problems, everybody, is that one of the tech problems is that I used to have this soundboard that I use on my tablet, and it stopped working right. And so I kind of was going to reinstall it, and it turns out it's not, I can't find it anymore. It's not there anymore. And so now I've been searching around for a soundboard I could use on an Android tablet, and it's been not an easy process. So I've got this kind of like, you know, whatever, rigged up system here. I'm not rigged system, but a rigged up system. Anyways, this is Kev Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. We'll be right back after this quick break.
I'm Rick Smith, and this is Labor History in Two. On this day in labor history, the year was 1863. That was the day President Abraham Lincoln delivered the Gettysburg Address. It is considered one of Lincoln's greatest speeches. Generations of students have been assigned to commit it to memory. The two-minute speech carries a deep significance to our country's history. Lincoln delivered the speech at the dedication of the Soldiers' National Cemetery in Gettysburg, Pennsylvania. 4 months earlier, the Union had defeated Confederate forces at the Battle of Gettysburg, the bloodiest battle of the Civil War. Casualties on both sides totaled nearly 50,000 over the course of the three-day battle. This battle, coupled with the fall of Vicksburg, is often considered the turning point in the war to end the slave labor system. Lincoln's speech served to redefine the war's purpose. Originally, the emphasis had been one of preserving the Union. Now, Lincoln drew upon the Declaration of Independence to also highlight the national struggle for human equality. Lincoln began his speech with the acknowledgement that the nation was dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. He ended the Gettysburg Address stating, "This nation, under God, shall have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from this earth." Most Republicans praised the speech, but historian Eric Foner notes in his biography of Lincoln that many Democrats denounced Lincoln for unilaterally redefining the war's purpose, which they insisted had nothing to do with equality. In 2015, the Abraham Lincoln Presidential Library Foundation published an edited volume, Gettysburg Replies. It features 272 word essays by presidents, historians, poets, actors, scientists, and others about the lasting influence of the Gettysburg Address.
Labor History in Two, brought to you by the Illinois Labor History Society and The Rick Smith Show.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Kevin Mahoney sitting here once again with Sean Kitchen, talking about the good, the bad, the ugly, state and national politics. So, Sean, about time we started to start off with a feel-good story.
Well, I think before we get into actual news, we should make an announcement. I forgot to put in the notes. Jake Corman is officially running for governor now.
Of course. How could we miss that?
You know, he had a breakthrough case of COVID and couldn't have his campaign launch about a week and a half ago. So he officially launched his campaign this week.
Yeah, now he's getting mad at Mike Turzai now, right?
Jesus Christ. I mean, like, it's amazing. I hope Turzai runs. I mean, like, why not? Like, I mean, he gets out of the house at the right time, like in March before the pandemic. Like, imagine that. You quit your job like in fucking March. You don't think he saw that coming?
Oh yeah. I mean,
just like
I want Turzai to run just for the sound bites. That's all I'm saying.
I mean, like, he couldn't even beat Scott Wagner in his own counties back home.
Exactly. That'd be fun.
Like, well, like, the thing about, like, this, I mean, like, who does this primary benefit? Like, you're going to have someone that's going to win with, like, 30 fucking percent of the vote because you're going to have, like, 7 or 8 people, like, running for governor in Pennsylvania. Like, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So, like, who is going to get, like, that stuff? So
that's gonna be fun. It'll be fun.
Yeah, but like, okay, so getting the good news.
Come on, man. I'm on trying the optimistic, going to Thanksgiving ready to go kind of mood today.
So Emily Best from the Night Caucus started this GoFundMe in response to this like really terrible, heinous like news story in Fulton County. Fulton County commissioners pretty much denied, in short, TLDR version, you know, the Fulton County commissioners denied a funding increase, $3,000 request funding increase from $12,000 to $15,000 a year. Very paltry, I know. Very, like, paltry request. You know, and the county commissioners, Randy Bunch and Stuart Olsch, who are no strangers to the podcast, mm-hmm. for other issues, they pretty much denied the funding over claiming that that they host hate groups that are sympathetic to the LGBT and Black Lives Matter causes. And we can't be having Proud Boys in there if they're, you know, pretty much because a library does what a library does. It acts as a meeting space for
exactly
the public.
So yeah, so her so
they gonna... yeah, yeah. So I mean, like, yeah, sorry. No, so no, she sorry, I was getting off track. So she launched the Emily launched a GoFundMe page in response to cover that $3,000 request, and literally within a couple of days, it got up to, like, really within a day, she hit $10,000, and it, like, you know, Rick Will Bunch wrote about it, got a couple huge bumps from people like Malcolm and Fetterman sharing it on Twitter, and Will Bunch ended up writing about it, and, you know, raised over $26,000 for this library within the past week.
Yep, right now it is at $26,388, and they set a new goal for $28,000. So you got to head on over there. We got the link in the show notes. Head on over there to support the Fulton County Library, and give what you can. Right, $10. $25, $100, right? Kind of throw in for this. Because remember, you know, this is a perfect example of, like, on like the most direct way. This is obviously about making sure that we're gonna shore up the funds and support that library. But on another point, this is kind of like a warning shot, right? You come after our libraries, you come to that stuff, we're going to get together and we're gonna step in here. It's an awesome pushback, and like, kudos to Emily Best for getting this going and then watching it skyrocket. There, it's fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, like, the commissioners were literally like citing stories that were deemed like conspiracy theories by Snopes.
Yep.
Like, in the stuff what they were doing, like in the site, like their reasons, their bigotry. So, so there was that. There was the good news for the week.
I'm gonna put the GoFundMe in the chat right now. So if there's anybody who wants GoFundMe, here is the link for anybody who's looking for it. Who's on right now? Go ahead. I'm sorry, Sean. Go ahead.
And now for the fun news. With the house this week.
Whoop whoop.
Yeah, I mean, the House passed a constitutional open carry, like gun rights bill, like exactly that in Ohio, pretty much. So that's going to be vetoed by Governor Wolf. The House also passed a bill outlawing bail funds, community bail funds. This is a bill that really popped up out of nowhere, got drafted, introduced, had no co-sponsor memo circulated, had no hearings on it, just got voted out of committee, and you know, flew right through the House within like 3 weeks. So that got passed, and then you know, they debated and punted House Bill 1800, voter suppression, final vote until December session. So, you know, more fun stuff.
More fun stuff.
And then this week, the House Labor and Industry Committee held a bunch of hearings, pretty much like outlawing public sector unions in Pennsylvania. The public sector union leaders, Steve Catanese and Rick Askey from PSCA, Steve from SEIU, held a press conference outside of it. They refused to participate, and all House Democratic members refused to participate, and the chair walked out, pretty much calling it a House Policy Committee, and that's what we're going to give them. We're not going to participate in the farce.
There you go. I mean, that's exactly what they should do. So let me ask you this. So both what you saw with the what the House Republicans are doing basically across the board here. I mean, most of what you saw in that, you know, the open carry gun rights bill, the bail fund stuff, like that's the kind of stuff that we would expect right now Wolf to veto, right?
Yes. Wolf hasn't issued anything about the bail fund, but he's going to definitely the gun bill's getting vetoed.
Yeah. So, I mean, this is the kind of the similar kind of thing, you know, approach that we see.
Also, on top of that, last week, this hasn't really gotten a lot of play, but Cutler and Aument, House and Senate leaders, House Speaker and the Senate leader, Aument, I think is like third in line, held a press conference pretty much saying that they will use the constitutional process to advance their extremist agenda if the governor's not going to bend to them, claiming that it's the will of the people and they're going to put up the vote to the people, basically using low voter turnout elections or primaries to exploit that to enact a radical right-wing agenda over a four-year period. And one of the things that they mentioned is like that they will put they said that they will put House Bill 1800, which is going to get vetoed by the Governor Wolf and other bills radically changing amendments, radically changing our election laws to a constitutional vote. And that could be on the ballot in like 2023, in the 2023 primary.
Well, and I see what we had, you know, they had their nice little test run too as well with kind of removing the kind of emergency powers from the governor, right, through this process. And so they got their trial run and they found it successful. And so now I think this is,
you know, I think they're putting their hands in the cookie jar too many times with this.
We'll see.
You know, the pretty much like the vote no with this got voted down, passed by like slim margins with no money being put towards it, right? No funding towards that, because it was not a fight that the Democratic Party was going to dump millions of dollars into in an off-year fight, especially with the judicial gerrymandering hanging over the ballot, just hanging out there in left field, right? I mean, that can still come up, you know, next year at some point, right, like in 2022. Right. So, you know, that's where the money's getting concentrated and focusing on. I mean, I think it's a type of thing where, you know, you start putting things up on there, like making public sector unions illegal or making abortion illegal. You know, you want to start enacting. I think it's a really quick way to piss off voters. You know what I mean? I don't know.
I agree with you, but I don't. Like this is why the move to kind of remove those emergency powers around health stuff from the
government. I'm not alarmed with that. I think that they spent a lot of money and didn't get the, they got like still almost lost when like the other side spent no money at all. So I mean, the margins, they won slim margins by dumping millions of dollars while the other side spent nothing. So I'm not too concerned because like I feel like there's the infrastructure in place. And we'll the thing is just like you can't be spending money on every single, and that's what they're gonna do. I think it's just like bleed people.
No, I get that, right? But you can also see, like, we also have a long history of the right wing in this country and in this state, right, of just throwing shit at the wall to see what sticks.
Oh, no, and I think they're going to do this.
Well, and this is what I'm saying is, like, and look, it doesn't – just because I agree with your analysis kind of in general, right? But the thing is that
– they're going to go through with it no matter
it's
what.
It's unpredictable. Right.
Yeah.
If all it takes is some sort of kind of like, you know,
a 9% turnout primary.
Yeah. Or something that just kind of like happens that kind of motivates around some one of these particular kind of issues. And that
like they use the mask mandates
exactly.
No, I mean, I think this ties into the stuff that's going on with the school board. So like, you know, they're using this stuff to keep the culture wars going.
Yep.
And keep on stoking the base. Legislatively, but
yeah, 100%. As I want to talk about this thing for Central Bucks in just a second, I want to say that the other thing, I just want to put the plug out this, so people should be watching this case. You know, there's been pushes for a fair funding formula for public schools for a long time in this state. We recognize there's huge disparities in terms of how public schools are funded because everything's funded by property taxes, and there's not a fair distribution of kind of state level fundings in order to make sure that there's adequate education across the board. This is actually going forward in a trial right now, right? Over this kind of like, say, discrimination, violation of civil rights stuff.
This is like 6 or 7 years process.
Exactly.
Like, this is years in the making.
Exactly. And then there was a great profile in the I think WHYY had the kind of the initial article, and it got kind of circulated a bunch there, focusing on what was going on in the Panther Valley School District, because there's a Panther Valley School District and there's five other school districts that are part of this lawsuit. And you know, like I said in the opening, they have Brian Cutler, the House Speaker, GOP House Speaker, just kind of like, I don't see what the problem is. There's like maybe some discrepancy. You can't have everything the same, blah, blah, blah. Right, just a bunch of nonsense. And they go, he's like, just the example of Panther Valley is so useful there because you can see you got a situation where it's, you know, got 75 kindergartners at the Panther Valley School are forced to share one toilet and two urinals. Right. There's an example. But at that same school district. Right. So that, and Panther Valley spans like both Carbon and Schuylkill counties. Right. And it serves more than 1600 students. Around 56% of those students are classified as economically disadvantaged from the get go. Right. And in those school districts, they've also been forced to do things like, you know, the principal has to be the social worker, even though the principal's not a social worker, right? You basically they have no nurse on staff. They've got, everything that you would expect there to be there as a support services are gone. And what Panther Valley nearly had to do before the pandemic was cut their entire music program, their entire art program, and all of their sports. Right. That's how desperate and cash strapped you're talking about the school district as being. But that got plugged by some of the federal relief, the pandemic relief funds that came in to bolster that up. But that's going to be gone. And so now they're right at the point too, as well. They're getting ready to have to kind of cut all those things again. And so these are the kind of issues that are at stake in this lawsuit. So it's going to be fascinating to see how this moves forward. And is it going to set a tone for a more equitable, you know, equitable funding of schools in the state? We shall see.
Yeah, I mean, like, this is the one thing we don't, like, Republicans love talking about socialism and, like, Philadelphia just taking up all the money with a fair funding formula, but no one talks about the rural school districts are just getting fucked.
Completely.
In this conversation, like, it's always... You know, it's always about making it about Philadelphia, you know, and those kids, like, yep. You know, those black and brown students are getting all the money and socialism and stuff like this, where it's like, no, you have schools like in Lower Marion that are serving, what, Donna Cooper said this on like Rick Smith's show years ago, yep. like they're serving like sushi, and like a mile, 2 miles away, you have students living in abject poverty in like West Philadelphia and stuff like this. Like, no, there is an unequal distribution of wealth, especially when it comes to education in this country or and in the state, and it's all being directed towards your affluent suburbs.
Yep.
Outside of Philadelphia, Pittsburgh, Harrisburg, and, you know, like those cities. And pretty much like everywhere else is just getting fucked in the school funding formula. Like, especially yep. like community, yeah, small schools, like public schools.
Yeah, I agree. About, yep, I agree. Sorry, I'm just responding to a chat here.
No problem.
Yeah, and absolutely, absolutely. So one of the things, this was a huge deal, like in my neck of the woods, so at Kutztown University, you have Kutztown University Dining Workers United. There was a rally on Tuesday. You heard me talk about this on the show. We're kind of announcing, we're plugging in our YouTube channel and everything. Well, they had an amazing turnout for this. You had students, you had community members show up. You had, and Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman was there too as well for a press conference to kind of like get, like to kick off the rally. It was absolutely, it was a high energy, phenomenal turnout, you know, and these workers are, you know, here, I've told the story again on Monday, but I want to tell it again to make sure everybody's getting this one. And this is constantly going to go through people's minds. So as workers were organizing in that campaign, right, you know, it seemed to be that, you know, Aramark, you know, might kind of just like voluntarily recognize them, or at least kind of like let the vote take place, you know, just kind of just to be non-interference, going to be neutral in terms of how this is going to moving forward. That had been the stance they had taken at some other recent organizing efforts, like at East Stroudsburg and some other places kind of across the state. So it seemed like that was the direction things were going, right? They, you know, Aramark is notorious for its kind of anti-union stuff. It's notorious for, like, you know, like, you know, your closed door kind of captive audience meetings and all that kind of thing. They weren't doing that in this case, right? And it seemed like, okay, look, post-pandemic, right, we already got this contract. We got the union workers that we're working with up in East Stroudsburg. You know, this will guarantee that we keep this contract. So let's just kind of like stay out of this, not make a big fuss about it, move forward. Now, again, maybe I'm just reading this entirely wrong, but that was kind of the sense of things, kind of on the ground. Then suddenly there was a, you know, Aramark officials kind of apparently got together with university officials to talk about kind of how they were saying, and then shortly after that, anti-union messages started, like letters and emails started going out to workers and community members and things like this, right? So you start getting that. They had the captive audience meetings suddenly are kind of being called, right? Like all of a sudden. And the university administration denies that they had any position or said anything to Aronak up there. And I just call bullshit on that. I have no basis at all to tell, to say, like, fact. I don't have proof that the university administration, particular Kenneth Hawkinson and the other finance people, say, told Aramark that, no, they don't want the union. I have no proof that that's the case. But if you start putting two to two together, and you know that you're working in an anti-union administration, right? As you know, people have been there looking at one at an administration that is clearly anti-worker, it's anti-faculty, anti-worker, right? It loves its PR, but it like doesn't want to pay for its labor force, doesn't want to actually invest in that. That's what it seems like that's going on there. Like, again, I can't confirm that, but that's what I suspect. So to have this turnout on Tuesday, where you have, you know, John Fetterman show up for there for those workers, to have such a big crowd show up was freaking awesome. So and now the fight moves forward. And we know that, you know, it's going to depend on what happens next. Those workers are fired up. They're continuing their organizing drive. We might get some of those workers on this show coming up in days, you know, days and weeks to come. We'll see what happens in their organizing drive. But just want to be, you know, thank everybody in this community too as well. Because I heard back from people, a bunch of folks who listened to Art to Coop Live and listened to our Friday show. I've heard back that there's emails that were sent kind of to Hawkinson, that there was a support sent to the workers, that the union videos that were kind of being put out kind of supporting for the rally were being shared out by our community. So I want to thank everybody in this community for kind of like doing our little part, right, to pushing this out and supporting that that rally. And huge kudos goes to Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman for showing up and being there to support those workers.
Could you imagine like Fetterman being some sort of like scab breaker on a picket line. Just like at like that, like during those times.
Like, you're gonna do what? you're gonna come to work when there's a picket line? that'd be good.
Yeah. But
love having there. So good. So another thing I'm gonna give a quick plug to this, and I'm not gonna go into this in a whole bunch of detail because I am gonna do a show on our Patreon. It's gonna be a Patreon only kind of initial release at least. We'll probably make it free eventually. But there was a really big week in terms of focus on say Bucks County schools and what's been happening in these school districts that we've been covering, you know, since, you know, over the summer.
Oh, I'm sorry. I do want to say a couple things.
I'm sorry. My bad.
Fuck. I got distracted. My Slack was popping off of my headphones and just make sure I wasn't getting. But one of the things I wanted to talk about, especially with Fetterman, and we didn't get in, like, we were talking this before the podcast, but like what Fetterman and Malcolm Kenyatta have been doing with like just normalizing going to labor actions, you know, up and down, like all across the state, the Kellogg workers here, you know, they were both at the Scranton teacher strike. I mean, like, it feels like voters are taking notice of that, especially the workers. I mean, once Fetterman showed up, I mean, I think he's going to run away with this primary. I think that's what it's looking like it's going to be. But like seeing the teachers and workers at like these events, they absolutely just love the guy.
Yep.
And they love him for showing up to like their strikes and like their lines and stuff like that. So
yeah, I mean, 100%. I mean, I think that, you know, that's what, you know, came away too. I heard back from some of the, you know, some of the workers and the organizers and folks, and then some of the student activists, like, you know, KU activists who did like amazing work helping organize that that rally and been continuing to organize students on campus, getting the word out about, you know, support of solidarity efforts of the KU dining hall workers. And then that's exactly what I heard afterwards is that, you know, they loved them, right? I mean, the faculty were there, the students who were there, the workers who were out there for the rally. You know, it's like, and that means something, right? It means something in these fights to see that this is, that people are paying attention, and, you know, and for folks like this to show up. So, you know, like I say, kudos to Fetterman on this one.
Yeah. So that was my quick little thing. Sidetrack.
Yeah, no, good. I mean, I'm glad we could accommodate your Slack and everything like this, and making sure that, you know, you got your Discord going and your tweets and you're all kind of, I get it.
Right. You know, like all these things are like popping off in my head. So.
Yeah, I don't know. I get, you know, I totally get it. You know, I totally understand. It's like, you know, it's kind of like free association kind of stuff going on. I got it. but so to close this out today, on the PA focus, so you may have been paying attention to what's been happening in the school districts, obviously. And this week, the New York Times got a podcast called The Daily. Right. And The Daily is one of the, you know, the most widely listened to podcasts, like literally in the world. I'm not being kind of like, you know, I'm not exaggerating.
More than Joe Rogan.
What's that?
More than Joe Rogan.
Well, technically he's a YouTube show, but so I'm just going to say, I mean, it's like, okay. Now my mind went like, blah, blah, blah. Anyways. So they did it was a two-part show on Monday and Tuesday, I believe, right? From The Daily. It was called School Board Wars. And it was, you know, this issues around critical race theory, anti-masking, but really the focus on these kind of contentious school boards. And the story focused around, look at the Central Bucks School District, right? Kind of the Doylestown area, right? Which is literally right down the street from me. I know several people who like live in my town who work at that school district, right? And kind of followed the podcast or followed the kind of development of this. And look, I want to say that the journalist who really was on the ground was covering this stuff. I don't want to go too hard like on the journalist, because I think Cyril said this on the show on Wednesday too, and I tend to agree with him. It's kind of a hard story to tell when your focus is like a national audience. How do you kind of how do you have a good story that is going to kind of get attention to what's happening in the district to get to the point that you're trying to get at, and without getting too far down into the weeds, right? And I had the first episode really, I felt led with a little bit too much of this kind of bullsiderisms in terms of like how this developed, right? It kind of just like happened out of the blue, like, and they started growing and then eventually it became politicized. And that was not the narrative that I saw happening on the ground, right? The second part of the podcast was, I thought, much better in the sense that it got us, you know, they got an interview with Paul Martino and had a kind of pretty lengthy exchange with Paul Martino on this. Now, did the journalists go as hard as I think they should have gone against Paul Martino by confronting him with like the clearly counter evidence for the claims that he was making? Yes. But the important part that came out of that is was two things. And one had to do with Paul Martino says overtly that what he built was an asset. And now he has to figure out how to deploy that asset in future elections. Right. So everything that we've been saying on the show since the summer, right, Paul Martino went on this show to basically say, yep, that's what I just did. And now I'm going to take these people that I've activated, the organization I built, and now I'm going to think about how to be influential in terms of politics moving forward. Right.
That is, yeah, I mean, like, these people are going to be toxic in like state and Senate, totally. State House and Senate races.
Absolutely.
In Montgomery County next year.
Absolutely. Like,
and they're going to be toxic in like the Senate race, the Senate and governor's race that's going to be happening. Like, I mean, 2022 is going to be a hell of a fucking year.
No, so, 100%.
I mean, like, yeah. And again, how many people do you think from Montgomery and Bucks County between Jim Worthington and others got bussed down to the insurrection? I mean, like, I would say well over 1,000, right? I mean, like, yep. At least 1,000 from like that part of Central Bucks and Montgomery County probably went. I mean, like, or lower Bucks. This thing was brewing for a while. I mean, I told you about this, like, yep. When the night week I recorded that Young and Naive clip,
yep.
of Scott Wagner in Jenkintown. I mean, that was almost like going to a Klan rally.
Yeah.
I mean, like, the shit that was being said there was not what you were hearing in other parts of central Pennsylvania at the stuff he was talking about. I mean, it was a lot more cordial country club Republican types out here, but like here, you like there's no functioning Republican Party left in Montgomery or Bucks counties. It's just disintegrated. I mean, they won, but like they're on the way out. Like, you know what I mean?
Well, we'll see.
And someone's filling that void,
right? Well, I mean, this is,
I mean,
really...
Asher and like those types.
Yep.
Like Asher and the old money Republicans. They don't have control. Like, that's not who's running the party anymore.
No, definitely not. Definitely not. And I think it's going to be a big race. So, I mean, I think that part of, and this, I think, was really important to have a national spotlight on this too, as well, because I think it affirmed a lot of also what was happening in local organizing here around here with what's going on. Paul Martino could come in and drop, you know, like 10 grand under races. Right. And the other statistic that came out of that, came out of that podcast was that, there was a total of about $700,000 spent on those school board races, right? Not just here in Bucks County, but across. And $500,000 of that came from one guy, Paul Martino, right? And then they mentioned this in the podcast. They don't name the school district, but I'm pretty sure it was my school district they were referencing. In one school district, right? So you had, I think the total that was spent was something like on the GOP side was something like $10,400, and $10,000 of that was Paul Martino. Right. And just shows you that kind of money having influence in these races. For those folks listening to the show, yeah, I just dropped in the links to Dina Lagerman's piece and to the two parts of the podcast there too as well. Thanks, Amy, for the ask too as well. So here's the thing. So I'm going to do a little bit of a breakdown. I'll do that on our Patreon show. But I want to direct people to this absolutely fantastic piece from Medium. From Dina Lagerman. She ran for school board, right? She ran for school board in a, like, they have their school board broken up into kind of like different districts that you run kind of one-on-one races instead of like my school district, which is kind of everybody runs against everybody. And there hasn't been a Democrat who's won in her district, like, in kind of ages, right? So she ran here. She ran an excellent campaign. But after the podcast kind of ran through New York Times, she took to Medium to write kind of her response to this stuff. And I can't tell you how awesome it was to read this. It's so well written and so pointed, because she was the, like, there were direct attacks on her that was funded directly by Paul Martino's money. And she kind of lays that out there. And that, of course, was the exact part of the story that was neglected and left out from the New York Times podcast, right? From the Daily. So that is that was super, super important. So do check it out. I've reached out to her to see if we can get her on the podcast too as well. And we'll see if we can get her on, because I would love to talk to her about that piece for there. So also look for those folks who are patrons. Do also look for that that breakdown. We're going to go through some of the audio from the podcast too. About what some of the issues are there. But in the meantime, make sure you're clicking on that piece. So there'll be a link in the show notes, and it's I dropped a link in the chat today too as well, so you can go kind of read her piece, and do let her know that you're reading it and that where you heard about it. But most important, let her know that you kind of are appreciated putting out there, because it's a really excellent piece. Anyways, Sean, anything else on the PA focus before we hit the last call?
No, nothing really.
Nothing really. There we have it.
Looking at a nice parody account that popped up.
Oh, there you go. Parody accounts are always good.
Love this parody. Yes.
There you go.
It helps out the Doom Scroller.
It does indeed. All right. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I want to thank you for taking part. We're going to be right back with a kind of quick last call this week. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Remind you to go to patreon.com/RC Press. You can help support this podcast by becoming a patron for as little as $5 a month. We'll be right back after this quick break. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken Press. For the past 7 years, Raging Chicken Press has brought pull no punches, progressive reporting and commentary to the interwebs. Our long-form investigative pieces, stories that no access journalist wants to touch, or rollicking weekly podcasts strive to advance progressive movements and perspectives rooted in the struggles happening across the country or down the street. We've broken national stories and caused our share of discomfort in the halls of power. If we want a progressive future, we need progressive media. And you can help support Pull No Punches, homegrown progressive media today. Become a member of Raging Chicken Press for as little as $5 a month. Simply go to patreon.com/RC Press and choose your membership level. We need to make sure to keep the movement in the media and the media in the movement. Best way you can do that is to become a member of Raging Chicken today by going to patreon.com/RC Press. Thank you for your energy, your encouragement, and your support. Keep up the fight. Hey, everybody, welcome back. This is Kevin Mahoney here with Sean Kitchen for this week's last call. I don't know what we do. This is kind of like originalized. This segment was originally about kind of doing beer reviews and a bunch of other stuff. And now it's just kind of like, hey, what else is going on here? I do think that it's going to be really important. I think we should start off today with a little special segment that I like to call Views from Sean's Lifestyle Channel. Sean just got, he was showing this off to me before the show ahead of time. He was actually
came in before I got on the Zoom.
You can't see it in the screen in the frame right now, but off to the side of that, he's got this kind of little kind of photo setup over there where he demonstrates his new products on there for his Instagram and things like this. Let everybody know. Well, he did a little bit before the show. He did a little bit of unboxing for me to show me about, you know, the latest for his thing. So, Sean, please do tell us about your latest product.
Oh, no, I bought a small camera bag.
Yeah.
Like enough for like my camera, a body and lens, which is nice, and it doesn't mean I have to carry like a 20-pound like bag around with me all day.
Don't we get to see it? Come on, man. Show the world, man. Look at that little puppy. Look at that puppy.
Yeah, really, it fits my camera with the lens attached to it, and then it fits another lens in there.
Yeah,
so it's really like a two lens bag. It's nice. I like it. It'll be good for the Capitol.
Oh man! Oh man! Here we go. Somebody just said, "Oh, Sean, you got to throw it up again. You got to throw it up again." The video. I didn't switch the video over, so everyone's got to be able to see. There we go. There it is. All right, now everybody can see. It's a little nice one.
It's a short 6-liter bag. It's nice. I got it from Tech Pouch. It's like my third or fourth bag from them. Bought the backpack. The backpack's amazing. It's just like it's just too heavy to carry.
Well, isn't that the one that you got? Like, I remember that one you got a while back, and it's got it like fits on your back really well, so that you're not.
Well, that's like that's a 15-liter bag.
I don't know what that means.
So the capacity of it.
15-year.
15-liter.
Oh, liter! I thought you said year. I'm
No.
Is that
how many like liters?
Flood?
So how many like liters? It so it's a 15-liter bag. This what I bought is 6 liters. So it's a lot more compact and it holds a lot less stuff. The other one, like, it torques my back too much, like, because of how heavy it would get. You know, this would be really good just for, like, my one lens is a prime lens. Well, two prime lenses, pretty much. So my 85 millimeter and my 35, which are just, like, pretty light. They're not weighing, like, 3 or 4 pounds, which, like, that shit adds up pretty quickly.
Yeah.
Like, when you're doing that. And then I can put like my other video gear in there, like on days I don't need my camera and I just need like my video set up for my phone. I could put that in there and, you know.
That's awesome. Well, I mean, that'd be good for when you're doing like shots of like with birds and things like this too, right? I mean, you could easily take it.
Not really.
No.
No, because it's too, it won't fit a big lens in there.
Oh, gotcha. So you still need to take the other one for something like that. Gotcha.
Yeah. No, like those lenses are big. I mean, like I want to get a 400 millimeter lens. In the spring, but you know those things start costing fucking money. The like a 400 f4 lens cost like $7,000 or $8,000. So like, I mean, what would a lens like that do?
I like when you say those numbers to me, it's like you're speaking another language. I don't know what that means.
So it's a 400 millimeter lens. So it's like a telephoto. Tells like a very like big zoom. Like that's a birding photographer, like a sports lens. Like if you're on the sidelines of a football game, like they usually have like a 400 2.8 or a 600 2.8, which at that point, like that's how that's the aperture 2.8, how fast it is. At that point, those lenses are like $13,000, $14,000. You know, ones that are at F4, which is like a little bit less light, that gets like $7,000 or $8,000. Mm-hmm. And then the one I'm looking at used is like $1,000. And it's a 5.6. So it's all about how much light goes in the aperture and shit like that.
Very, very cool. Very, very cool. But, all right. Well, congratulations. I know that stuff like that. I got to say, like, I kid Sean a lot about like his lifestyle channel and stuff like this, but it's like, it's actually great stuff. Seriously. It's like both is like,
I got my friends telling me I should start doing cooking videos.
Well, this is what I'm going to say. It's like, I'm serious. Like, I was just about to say that. I can't believe you just said that. I was literally just going to say is like, you know, he posts great pictures of his food. And sometimes when Sean and I talk, he'll tell me a little bit about like how he's making stuff and all this stuff. I'm like, man, you get a setup like that and do like cooking videos, man, you could
be crushing it on like YouTube.
You could be crushing it. Yeah, exactly.
I choose like not, I don't know. I mean, like that shit is one, my kitchen's too small, and two, like I don't have the right camera lens for that. I need like a really wide, like 16 to like 35. And I just don't feel like getting that because I don't need it.
Yeah.
But
you know, I could still see you doing some great TikToks with that. That's all I'm saying. Yeah, exactly. That's all you need. Right there.
I can't believe like I was actually like on a work call this week and like we're already talking about like 2022 and just like what we need to do. And it's like we need to focus on TikTok. And it's like I feel old for saying that.
Well, I mean, look,
but I mean, like you with the social media stuff, or Kutztown with the social media stuff.
It's critical. I mean, frankly, before earlier this fall, by the end of the summer, I mean, I was going to go ahead and start doing that stuff for Raging Chicken. I had some ideas about kind of what we could do is kind of consistent content and things like this. It's just frankly, for me, I just don't have the time to do it. And it's like, TikTok works obviously different than other kind of social media. And so you got to be able to, you know, if you're going to do content, you got to do content. right? And to do good content that's gonna catch up on TikTok, you spend kind of the time doing it. And I give it, like, you know, if we're still around in a couple years, right? My daughter is going to be my production assistant. I guarantee it. Like, she's already, like, they do not have that stuff. They do not put videos up publicly at this point. But she and my niece love to kind of make little things for themselves and stuff. So I know that. So
I wanted to talk about, like, one other thing. This Twitter account called the Harrisburg Beach Club.
Beach Club? Oh, I saw this. I saw this week.
Yes. So, there's this, like, grift in Harrisburg called the Harrisburg Beach Club. And did you ever, like, notice Harrisburg has a beach when you come here?
I've gone there multiple times, put up my umbrella.
You seem dumbfounded. But there's this thing, like, so there's this, like, hip developer named Adam Malst, who's also this Republican consultant that's just raking in millions of dollars doing stuff for, like, the Commonwealth Foundation and those PACs,
yep,
that, like, Martino and others are funding. So this guy ends up getting this grift called the Harrisburg Beach Club. At the tip of City Island in Harrisburg, there's this old, like, bathhouse, and going back from, like, last February, I usually take my walks in the morning, and, like, I'll go from, like, here. I got a loop where it's, like, 3.5 miles, like, close to, like, 4 miles, and it's, like, walking to the island. So, like, for the longest time, there's this bathhouse with a poster on it, like, giant banners at Harrisburg Beach Club, coming summer 2020 or coming spring 2021. And he literally just opened beginning in November. Like, it's, and, like, I don't know if people realize what it's like being in Harrisburg during the fall and winter, but it's not nice.
No.
It's very windy.
I would say beach weather.
Yeah, no. So someone started this parody account, like, hey, it's 45 and, like, sleeting outside. Great day for the beach club. But just, like, stuff like that. I mean, it's like this, we were talking about it. I'm trying to figure out, like, I know it's one of my friends who are behind it because of, like, who's liking the tweets and, like, who they're all following and stuff . And I have my suspicions. But, like, we were talking about this with Eric Strobel's girlfriend, Megan, that reminded them of, like, this giant grift back in St. Louis. Like, millions of dollars got dumped into, like, this train in Missouri or somewhere in St. Louis. Like this train or, like, this railway, like one of those things downtown, like on the Millennium Mile, like in Chicago, but it was supposed to, like, go, like, a half mile back and forth, like this monorail, and it just broke. And the city just dumped millions of dollars in this thing, and the people made off like bandits, and it never even fucking worked. And it's almost like what this thing's like.
See, I have to say, I didn't even realize it was an actual thing, right?
What, the beach club?
Yeah, I didn't realize.
Or the parody account.
This is awesome. This is awesome. Well, I thought it was a different kind of parody account. Like, I didn't realize there was actually this thing called the Harrisburg Beach Club that did. Like, I was just, yes, like, enjoying just the content. I thought the content was hilarious. Like, you know, you got this picture.
They got fucking people and music over there. Like, I wouldn't mind going out there when it was, like, in the 50s or 60s, like, on the riverfront.
Yeah.
But, like, now it's, like, you know, 45 degrees with, like, a 15-20 mile an hour wind for the next, like, 3 months. It's looking at colder and windier.
Oh,
not, I mean, not a lot of resistance there on the river, like, on an island.
Do you have to pay money to go to it?
No, it's open. They have, like, drinks, and apparently, like, they redid the bathhouse, which is, like, filled with skunks and, like, homeless people.
Nice.
I might have to go there just to like see what it's about.
Bring your camera, please.
Yeah. But this thing is just a total, like, it's a total fucking grift. I don't see it lasting next year after next year. So
nice.
people are probably laughing about this, but no, like, this is like some of the stupid things that like happened in Harrisburg, like these pop-up beer gardens that, like, drain the money out of resources and, like, you know, city actual assets and never fucking goes anywhere.
Hey, everybody's got to live, right, Sean? I mean, yeah, got to live on the grift. Got to live on the grift. Yeah, cool. Well, so this weekend we got, well, this week actually, there's even more, but focus on these for the, so if, for those folks who are like sci-fi fans out there, it's pretty cool week. There's this week we saw Star Trek Discovery, their new season launch this week. And if you listen to this show for any length of time, you know that I'm like a huge Trek fan. I've been since I was in high school, before high school, actually. I was there for the, you know, not, well, I watched the reruns, the old, of the old show, the original series, and then kind of all up through. Anyways, Star Trek Discovery came out. I was really, really excited about this when it got launched. If you don't know about it, like, they basically redid the entire initial season of the show, because of the rise of Trumpism, right? And wanted, that first season was really about, the dangers of kind of, you know, about racism, anti-immigrant stuff, and all this kind of thing. It was really, and they, the producers of the show were really very conscious of that. Has, lead characters are women, women of color, right? I mean, Michelle, Michelle Yeoh, is it? But she, I mean, it's just a phenomenal cast, great show if you're into this kind of sci-fi track. Well, they had their new season that came out this week. I've not seen it yet, so I can't even tell you what it's about. My good friend Amy, who is probably even a bigger Trek fan than I am, or nerd than I am on this stuff. Although that'd be a stiff competition, I would say. But anyhow, she messaged me about it yesterday. Like, did you see it? I'm like, I know, I came up on my feed. But she watched it last night, and she said she was like totally psyched about it. So I'm looking forward to that. But that's on Paramount Plus. You know, for those of you who are really diehard fans. And also, now, if you're also a sci-fi fan, there's this series, and it's pretty kind of like, it's got this kind of really huge kind of fandom around. It's called The Wheel of Time. And there's something like, I don't know, like 10 books or 15 books or something like this in the Wheel of Time series. And I've never read them. And to be honest with you, I didn't even know about them until pretty recently. And which is really surprising, you know, that I can't believe that I missed that somehow. But I could go on and on about the gaps in my education and my reading, and it's been so sporadic for my entire life. Amazon Prime kind of picked the series up, and it's been this highly anticipated version, and there's really cool stuff coming out around it. Tor.com, which is has great kind of sci-fi stuff and kind of discussion, technology stuff and things like this. Tor.com did this great piece on it. Basically gave like a primer for those folks who have not been part of the series but are kind of looking forward to here, and talked about the community around the Wheel of Time as being this very kind of open community, because you know all these little subculture stuff can get, they can be really like, well, you weren't a fan from back then, you're not a real fan. Apparently that hasn't really existed thus far, like around the Wheel of Time community. So that was kind of what they were launching there. So that's launched, I think, today. And so you got Star Trek Discovery, you got the Wheel of Time. There's another show which I didn't put in the show notes, but it's on Apple TV, which is called The Foundation. And I don't know if anybody knows anything about this, but I was looking at that last night too as well. That looks fascinating to me. So that's another one I got on my list to watch. So if you're looking for some good sci-fi going forward, there you have it. I know I'm going to be looking for the times where my kids go to sleep and then my wife goes to sleep so that I can watch it, right? So I'm going to be probably watching that in the wee hours of the morning, or getting up early and watching some of that stuff. So that'll be good. What was the other thing I was going to say about? Oh yeah, and that's just I want to give one more plug before we get out of here today for the show on Out to Coop Live this coming Monday. And I know that, you know, we normally don't go into the realm of subculture realms and culture realms so much for our interviews, but I think I'm going to be, number one, I think I'm going to start doing more of that stuff, and number two, this is just a really cool intersection, because, you know, I've been talking about on the show about how D&D, particularly the show The Dungeon Run, has been just kind of, I don't know, soul rescuing for me as I was preparing for this year, for going back to school at Kutztown. Is something that I would have on in the background and listen to, and there's a really cool storytelling. And as I was watching that show, I was really intrigued to that they were very tuned into kind of these kind of issues around race and culture, right? They never talked like openly about politics on the show. It was really focused on the D&D campaign that they were doing, but they would do this thing. They would close out the show, like humankind be both, right? Make sure that you vote, right? All that. And then some of their kind of side shows and stuff, they would talk a little bit about kind of, you know, wanting to kind of recommend or wanted to kind of like foster this sense of kind of inclusion and equity and stuff. And it was actually even built into some of the campaigns because all the, you know, the people playing it are all these kind of different voice actors and stuff. And so they would bring it to the show, right? About kind of really questioning some of the ways that the assumptions are making about particular races in that game. So anyways, as part of that, I started developing my own campaign because my kids started getting interested in it. And I kept on coming back to that question about race, because like a Dungeons and Dragons, you've got, you know, you got dwarves and you got elves, and you got orcs and you got humans and you got all these kind of different kind of, and they call them races. And there's, you know, different, you know, attributes to those races that are built into the race. Cause if you're this thing, you're this kind of person. Right. And that didn't sit right to me. And I'd been watching Dungeon Run. So I'm like, okay, well, I don't need to follow those rules like that. I mean, you know, cause and that's what they always tell you. If you're going to DM a game, like you're in charge, the rules are a guide. They're not like something strict you have to follow. And then I came across I said, well, I'm doing D&D and race. I'm curious about anything out there. And it was like, boom, there were all these discussion boards. There were these kind of like, you know, black D&D campaigners that were kind of out there talking about how they're kind of coming at these questions. And there was this book, called Ancestry and Culture in 5e, an alternative to race in 5e, Ancestry and Culture. And it was written by Gwen Marshall. And it's from this small press called Arcanist Press, right? This is what it looks like. It's this little thing. And Gwen Marshall is a professor of philosophy at Florida International University, right? And has written about this. Has also been involved in the tabletop gaming communities for quite some time. And she also, it's in the show notes for the upcoming show. But she also literally, and I found this out as I found this book. I'm like, who is this? She just came out as a trans woman, kind of a few weeks ago. Right. And, went to the first, gaming conference, as a kind of an out trans woman. So we're gonna talk a little about that too, as well, about being in that kind of culture and kind of finding communities of support within this. And then also about the importance of, say, of language and how we understanding race and how that is built into our storytelling. And to have something like this as a role-playing game that is so dependent upon the storytelling and the assumptions that we make and so on, it's a really fascinating piece. So, I first, you know, thought about reaching out to her when I got to thinking about what had happened in the video gaming community when, you know, you had these really toxic cultures spring up in the video gaming community at a time when people on the left and progressives, for the most part, were not even paying attention to that. Yet the alt-right, right, and the right wing was deeply attuned to this because they knew in these subcultures there were great places to get root and get their kind of like, you know, white supremacist nonsense and misogynist crap kind of like built into this. These communities in D&D, which started exploding during the pandemic, they really were basically very conscious, I think, of that history and were very consciously trying to do something different. Not all of them. I don't want to kind of paint too broad of a brush here, but in these communities that I've come across, and that's been really interesting, that they're conscious of what happens and want to, that this, say, this could be a space, right, that could be productive and about building connection, about building community and acceptance and having those issues raised in such a way that was kind of like kind of encouraging or progressive. And that was really fascinating. So that's why I'm going to have her on the show on Monday, this coming Monday at 7 p.m. And I hope you'll tune in and kind of give it a shot. And I know that you might not be the biggest D&D fans in the world, but I think it's important, especially for those of us who've got kids, right? Or who are kind of like, you know, in these kind of like gaming communities or something like this. I think it's really good to have that as part of our discussion. So anyways, that'll be Monday at 7 p.m. With Gwen Marshall. She is a philosophy professor at Florida International University and the co-owner and co-founder of Arcanist Press. We're going to be talking about her book, Ancestry and Culture, an Alternative to Race in 5e. So thank you all for tuning in. Sean, I hope you have an awesome weekend. And oh, I should say too, I assume we're not going to do a show next week, right?
Oh, no. I'm going to be home next week.
Yeah. So I forgot to mention that at the top of the show. So we will be off next week. Obviously, Thanksgiving. I want to wish everybody a super Thanksgiving break. If you're spending it with friends and family, please be safe, right? But enjoy that time of community that you can. And I know that for a lot of folks, sometimes going to Thanksgiving dinner isn't exactly a peaceful endeavor. But I know that I am going to keep mine as full of joy and love and thanks, really, as I can. So
just eat a couple of edibles beforehand and it'll be okay.
There you go. All right. Well, this is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. Thank you all out there for your listening. Thanks for the comments today. And I appreciate all the support that you've given us through the years. And continue to show us on social media. Continue to show us through your support. There's patreon.com/RC Press. Wishing you all a great Thanksgiving, super weekend. And we'll see you on the flip side. This is Kevin Mahoney, editor and founder of Raging Chicken. I can't believe I can't find it. Here it is. See, this is the problem. This is what happens when your soundboard is all messed up. You end up having to do stuff like this and kind of, vamp a little bit so that the music can come on and you can actually do your little closing. See how I just did that? All right. See everybody. Happy Thanksgiving. See ya!